Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 174, Finance Friday edition, where we interview Marine Corps officer Fabio and talk about real estate, burring, and paying for college.
So I've been trying to figure out how to get to this fine number because I don't necessarily want a giant real estate portfolio, just a couple properties to kind of support it. I was thinking if I can just do one property every 8 to 9 months with my own money, then over the next 5 years, I'll still accumulate a few.
My name is Mindy Jensen, and with me as always is my low-hanging fruit-slaying co-host, Scott Trench.
I don't know how you always produce these great intros, Mindy.
Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else, to introduce you to every money story, because we truly believe financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or figure out the path to retirement on a military pension, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so that you can launch yourself towards your dreams.
Scott, I am super excited to talk to Fabio today. During the course of our conversation, we will talk about real estate because that is one of the methods that he is choosing to pursue financial independence. And he also gets some advice from the CEO of Bigger Pockets, the Real Estate Investing Social Network, that says maybe real estate empire isn't really what you need unless that's what you choose, which I thought was very interesting today, Scott.
Yeah, of course I like real estate. I invest in real estate. I think it's a great tool. But you know, as Brandon Turner likes to say, people don't want a drill. They want a hole, right? So the real estate is one of many, many tools in the toolkit for building wealth. And in my opinion, the 80-20 of this situation wasn't real estate. It was something else. I think that the real estate is the 20. And to do that, it's got to be made passive, it's got to be made automated and systematized, and it's got to fit in with his overall core strategy. And so, yeah, I think it's a great introspective or dive into real estate investing as a potential toolkit in building wealth. And I think we had a great discussion around it. The reason we focused on it again today is because that's just where the bulk of his mind share and liquidity rest is in real estate right now.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation with Fabio today, and I'm really happy that he reached out. Before we bring in Fabio, first, my attorney makes me say the contents of this podcast are informational in nature and are not legal or tax advice, and neither Scott nor I nor Bigger Pockets is engaged in the provision of legal, tax, or any other advice. You should seek your own advice from professional advisors, including lawyers and accountants, regarding the legal, tax, and financial implications of any financial decision you contemplate. And this actually is some advice that I give to Fabio during the show as well, when he contemplates selling one of his properties.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED lights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Today, we are joined by Fabio, a 21-year Marine Corps officer who is hoping to spend another 5 years or so in the Marine Corps. Semper Fi. Oh, he's pursuing Semper Fi.
What? Awesome. Nice job. That's a great one. All right.
He is a newlywed with two teenage children, so paying for upcoming college is also on his mind. Fabio, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
I'm super excited. This is awesome. I feel like I'm meeting celebrities here.
Well, yes, I am. Scott's just a regular Joe, but I'm very famous. Everybody knows me. Everybody who listens to this show, that's it. So let's get a little bit of backstory. You're in the Marine Corps, so you have, I would say, fairly steady income. Unfortunately, defending the country isn't going to go out of business anytime soon because not everybody loves us, even though they should, because we're awesome. So let's talk about your income and expenses.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm a Marine officer, so my income is pretty steady. And I've had quite a few pay raises just over the years. I started off as enlisted, eventually finished my degree and became an officer. So I'm a captain, but because I've been in so long during my enlisted time, my pay is a little bit higher than your average captain. So with 21 years in and my wife, who started a new job recently, between the two of us, we're making about $9,800 a month. We do try to keep our expenses relatively low. So between our mortgage, insurance, personal expenses on like miscellaneous stuff, some loans that we have right now, we spend about half of our income every month. And the other half is on savings and a bird that we just started last year, first bird that we've ever done. So I feel like we're doing pretty good with the savings and all, saving about half of it, a little less than half. But as I get closer to retiring from the Marine Corps, I'm just trying to figure out how I can accelerate some of these things. Because for a long time, I was thinking, you know, kind of the regular retired 65 kind of thing. I was working towards that. But lately, especially with COVID, I've been kind of changing my mindset and trying to accelerate this a little bit.
Well, first, let's celebrate this 50% savings rate. I think we're doing okay. I think you're doing awesome. So yay, yeah, that's Fabio. That's fantastic. And the burr, how is that going? And is that a local burr or is that a long distance burr?
It's relatively local. I'm in Champaign, Illinois, but the burr is in St. Louis, so a little less than 3 hours away. So I'm able to go there about once a month or so and kind of check it out. Okay. And I do have family in St. Louis, so they kind of drive by and everything and check it out for me every now and again as well.
Ah, okay, perfect. And burr, for those of you who are listening who are confused by that, that is a buy. Oh, gosh.
Buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and repeat. Burr.
I get all the R's mixed up. Yeah. Burr. Yeah. And you're about to burr because you're getting ready to have a big cold front coming into the Illinois area. So 3 hours away, that's not so bad. What part of the burr are you in? You've got the B done.
So right now we're in the rehab.
Rehab. Okay. And what needs to be done on the property?
So this was a full rehab, which was a little nerve-wracking. It's a little nerve-wracking still. I bought it for $25K and hoping to get it to appraise for around 180 to 200. So it was a fourplex with very small one-bedroom apartments. And I'm converting it into two townhouses with three bedrooms on each side. So from top to bottom, everything had to be replaced. The furnace, the heaters, put in a whole new AC system, which it didn't have. Replacing all the floors, new kitchens. I mean, the whole works.
I want to come back to this burr in a little bit, but before I do that, I want to construct a balance sheet. We've got a great income statement here, and you know we don't need to dive, I don't think, too deeply into it unless you direct us to, because you have a 50% savings rate. That's extraordinary and really effective, and it means that you're generating $5,000 or so a month in savings. Is that about right?
It's a little bit less than that, and part of that right now, it's being eaten up by the private money lender that I have for the burr. But that's another thing I'm trying to figure out is, do I want to?
Yeah, but that's a business expense.
Right.
Yeah. So your personal spending is not crippling your ability to move toward retirement. You're thinking, I'm generating a ton of cash. How do I deploy it and my other assets more effectively to move towards FI? Plus you got a pension, all these other types of things coming into play. Is that a good summary
absolutely.
Of this we discussed so far? Okay. Let's build a balance sheet right now. What are your assets and debts against those assets?
So I have a duplex that I bought in 2016 in San Diego. I was returning to the States from Japan after being there for a couple of years, and I knew that I wanted to invest in another property. So I bought a duplex there, house hacked it through Airbnb, which helped me save a lot of money.
Awesome.
I ended up getting deployed to the Middle East. So I turned that, instead of doing Airbnb, I turned those both into long-term rentals, and I've had them as long-term rentals ever since then.
I bet you did fantastic on those. What does that look like?
So it's not a cash flowing property, I'll tell you that. And that's another thing that I'm debating. Do I want to keep it? Right now, my plan is to keep it as long as possible, but it's definitely not cash flowing being in San Diego. I bought it for 505. The loan was down to about 488 last year, but then with the rates dropping so low, I went ahead and refinanced it. So right now I owe 497 on it. Refinanced last year, so still have 29 and a half years. But the interest rate was super low. I got it down to 2.6. And actually, it even dropped a little bit more later on in the year, which I would have known, but nobody knows.
What do you think the asset value is?
So right now, it's valued at around 675. So it's nice. Gone up quite a bit in the few years that I've had it there. A lot of us see that California people are moving out, so I don't know how it's going to be long-term, but I still think it's going to be a good long-term investment.
There's still people that want to live in San Diego.
Yeah, I definitely want to live there if it wasn't so expensive. The rent is $3,300 a month, so it's definitely nowhere near the 1% rule or anything like that, but I kind of see it as more as a long-term appreciation and tax leverage.
And what's your payment on that?
After I refinanced, it was around $2,650 a month.
Okay, so you're lucky if you break even after the other expenses. Is that what you're kind of saying with the, you know, vacancy allowance, maintenance, those types of things?
But the payment is around $2,650, but I'm paying $3,000 a month. I like round numbers, so I just kept it at $3,000 a month. And so if I keep it at that rate, it should be paid off around 22, 23 years.
Okay, and then let's keep walking through your assets. What else? What other assets do you have?
So we have another property in Southern Arizona that we have. My wife bought that in 2011. Right now, she owes about $77,000 on it. It appraises at about $125,000. But there's a lot of, actually, just over the last 6 months, they've started building a lot of new properties around there. It's almost tripled in size just in the last year. There might be some appreciation there in the future. Also, not really cash flowing right now. The payment on that is about $750, $775 a month or so. And the rent is $800 a month. And she hasn't really raised that. She's had the same tenant for about 3 years or so. So we could raise it a little bit, but you know, it's been a good tenant. We haven't had any issues with them, so we're kind of keeping it as is. We had another property in St. Louis, but we sold that about 2 years ago. We have a house right now here in Illinois that I bought when I moved here a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. And I'm planning on selling that next year. Initially, I bought it with the intent of keeping it as a long-term rental, just like I've done the previous ones. But one of the big plays on this was that they had a deal where there was a tax abatement program for the first 5 years. So basically, I'm getting, in the 3 years I loaned the house, I'm getting about $17,000 back on taxes. That kind of makes up for a lot of the loss. And there has been good appreciation in the last 2 years here. So I should be able to sell that and make a few thousand dollars on top of the down payment and everything that I put into it, which I'll redeploy there to another property somewhere else or something else.
Okay. So you'll have some, how much liquidity? It sounds like you've already made your choice to sell that one. How much liquidity do you think you're going to net out of that down payment plus the benefit? Are you going to come into like $30,000, $40,000?
Yeah. So right now I owe $177,000, I believe, and it's appraised at $210,000. If the appreciation continues through this year, hopefully it does, then I should make about $30,000 or so, maybe a little bit less depending on fees and all that.
Okay, great.
So I'll get back what I put into it and then some.
Where are you going to live when you sell that house? Will you be deployed someplace else or are you in Illinois for a while?
So I'll be here until summer of next year. After that, I still have no idea. I won't know until around January of next year where I'm going. It could be overseas. It could be somewhere in the States. Don't know.
Okay.
There's still a big question mark of where I'll deploy that money, either a burr or I think I've got my wife on board with doing a house hack. She didn't really want to do it before, but I think she's coming around to that idea. So this might be our opportunity to do that.
Love it.
And you're in a college town, right? Has real estate been affected in the college town? Is the college actually having in-person classes right now?
So I'm super fortunate because this university did stay in person. They managed to, we weren't sure it was going to make it, but they did. They were very progressive and aggressive with their plan. So the market for the students has not been that bad. That said, where I bought the house is not on campus. It's outside of campus. So it's more of the professionals and grad students that kind of live in that area. So it still works as a rental. There are people who rent there at much higher rates, but you don't make quite as much as the buy room rentals that the people are doing here in on campus. But yeah, they haven't really been affected. They're still doing well.
Oh, okay. That's great. Okay. So we've got the San Diego duplex, the Arizona house, the Illinois home that you're getting ready to sell. You mentioned the Burr in St. Louis, and that is, you said you bought it for $25,000, but you have a hard money loan on that. What is your payment every month, and how soon do you think you'll be done with that?
So the payment on that is $1,222 a month. I should be done. The goal is to be done within the next 3 months. So we're actually a little bit less now, by the end of March, middle of April to be done. And ideally to have it rented by June, July at the very latest.
And what do you think the ARV will be on the property after you finished?
Minimum 180, but a lot of the properties in the area that are townhouses like that are going for 200, a little bit over 200. But if I can hit at least 180, the numbers will still work. The rent of that will be $1,000 per townhouse, so $2,000 a month. And then if it appraises for 200, I'll pull out 70,000 or 70% of the refinance, so 140. So the numbers should make sense at that point.
And how much is the construction going to cost you?
So all in all, when I worked out the numbers initially, I worked it out to 120 for the rehab. But my brother who lives in St. Louis is actually helping me with some of that stuff. So I'm hoping we're going to be taking over our part because a big part of it, we had a contractor doing. So all the major stuff is a contractor doing it. My brother and I are just doing the floors, the painting, some of kind of like the basic stuff.
The fun stuff.
Yeah.
So you bought the place for 25, you're going to put 120 into it, maybe less if you can, but some of that you're just going to arbitrage by not paying somebody else, you're going to do it yourself.
Right.
So it's 145 in, and you think it will appraise for 180,000 at the end of that, allowing you to extract much, but maybe not all of your cash if things go well.
Right.
Okay, great.
And ideally we'll keep the total rehab around 100, 110. And most of the major stuff's already done. So as we're coming towards the end, it looks like I'll be able to hit that 100 to 110 rehab. And if we do hit the 200 ARV, then the numbers will work out even better. We won't have any money left in the deal.
That's great. Let's keep going. I think we're going to come back to this because it seems where a lot of your mind share is going is to this Burr right now. What are the other assets we're talking about here? Do you own more real estate, or are there, you know, retirement accounts, those types of things?
So I didn't mention the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan, which is kind of like a 401k at a civilian job. So I started investing in that when I was very young in the military. Didn't really know much about it, just needed the whole 10% thing. One thing that a lot of military people don't know, and I didn't know for a long time, was that they only do 10% of your basic pay, not your total pay. So like our housing allowance and money that we get for food, and if we're deployed, combat zone pay, stuff like that, it's not accounted into that. So for most of my career, I was not putting in actual 10%. It was maybe more like 5 or 6%. So it didn't accumulate the way that I would have liked. That said, the reason I started doing it early on is because of the calculators. And I know you guys talk about that a lot. And the calculators keep saying, if I'm doing 10% of this, it'll hit a couple million dollars by the time I retire. So to answer your question, right now I only have around 35K in the TSP. I did have quite a bit more, but I pulled some of that money out in order to help with the Burr last year. So that's, I see Mindy's face, and I know that's kind of like a big no-no. I told her that in the email. So that's another reason why I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that. Should I pay back that loan? Should I keep it in the Burr? I'm trying to accelerate FI.
So we've got an asset of $35,000, and we've got what sounds like a liability where you owe your TSP some money. How much do you owe your TSP?
100K.
Okay.
You have a loan against your TSP, or you pulled it all out?
Loan. So right now the payment plans are paused, but whenever I unpause it, I have to pay it back. And then if I don't, obviously then I pay the taxes on it.
Okay. My idea for that would be to pay it back, because then you have 135 in your TSP instead of just 35. And Scott, I would be really interested to hear what you think about taking the disbursement, because you have to pay a penalty too, don't you? With the TSP, it's a 10% penalty. It's just like the 401k. It's a 10% penalty plus taxes at your current income level. I think that's going to end up costing you a lot of money. And if you can throw all that money back from the BRRRR, that might be a really good thing to think about.
I have a bias in terms of my opinion about that, but I am not. I want to get the rest of your balance sheet first and see if we're missing any other assets or those or other types of debts that are going on.
Yeah. So a couple more things. Right now I have 86 grand in savings, and that's what I'm using for the BRRRR. I've already put almost 50K into the BRRRR deal, but next month in about 2 or 3 weeks, I'll have the private money lender go do an inspection, and all the money that I've put in, they'll do the inspection. They'll give me that back. So I started this BRRRR with about 130, 135, and I've spent about 50 of that already.
And were those savings accumulations you had previously, or are those savings that you got as a result of taking out this private loan?
So it's two things. So I had some savings already. 100K came from the loan. And then last year I had just under 30K saved up, because I'd been saving up for, wasn't sure if I was going to do a BRRRR, what I was going to do. But then when COVID happened, I remember talking to my coworkers about it and saying, you know,
100K came from the hard money loan or from your liability against your TSP?
From the TSP.
Okay, great.
And then I had just under 30K saved up last year. When COVID happened, I kind of saw it as an opportunity. I remember telling my friends, I'm either going to delay my retirement by 1 year or I'm going to accelerate it by a couple of years. So what I did is I invested that money in some stocks, which I generally don't do. And it was, I guess, a good year for rookies to do it. So I was able to actually make pretty good money on that, just under 30K into almost another 100K. So that's where I have some of this money. So I still have the 86K in savings plus the 50 that I've spent in the BRRRR. And then I still have, as of last week, I know the market dropped a lot. Last week, it was about 42K still left in some stocks. And I plan on keeping that in stocks for now, just as a backup for emergencies and stuff like that.
Sorry, the last bit. You have 80K in the savings, 50 went into the BRRRR. You had 100, so that was 135. And then what was that last bit in stocks? How much is in stocks?
About 42K right now.
42K in stocks. Okay, great. Any other assets or debts that we should know about?
So debts, we did have my wife's credit card debt last year, but we paid that off. This month, or this semester actually, is her last semester of college for her bachelor's degree. So we're looking at about $7,000 or $8,000 that we'll need to pay off. Right now it's a student loan for this semester. But as I told her, I don't really want to have that loan on our budget, on our spreadsheet. So we'll probably take some money out of savings and just pay that off this summer once she's done with school. Other than that, our cars are paid off. Do have a motorcycle that I'm probably going to sell this summer, just because now that I'm living in Illinois, I don't get to ride it. I was in San Diego before this and I rode it year round here. It's just sitting in my garage. So I'm going to sell it this spring. Probably get $5,000 out of that. Cars we're going to keep till they run into the dirt. Unless we get deployed overseas, then we'll probably sell them at that point. And I believe that is it. Not really other debts or anything.
Awesome. So I'm building a picture of a $300,000 to $500,000 net worth in that range. Is that kind of how you're pegging it?
Yes, between the equity from the houses and all, yes.
And yeah, you're really heavy in real estate here. Let me ask you this. What's been your savings like? How much savings do you kind of generate prior to this year on average? Your 50% savings rate, have you sustained that for some time or is that relatively new?
No, so it's varied throughout my whole life. So like Mindy said, I've been in the Marine Corps for 21 years and I've always been big on savings. Just never really knew what to do with that. But some of that money was not used too well. At one point we had a student loan with my ex-wife. We paid off. At the time, probably was not the best thing to do because we could have invested it. So it's to kind of long story short, it's varied from anywhere from 15% to 40%, depending on the years. The last 3 years or so is where I've really kind of intensified that and started off at around 30%, 40%. And then this past year, with my wife now working and she moved in with me, we've been able to bump that up just under 50%. I think it's around 46, 47% savings rate.
And that's about $4,500 a month or so.
If we're counting the BRRRR payment and all that, yes.
So that's really good. That means you're accumulating 50. You're going to, on a future state basis, be accumulating $50,000 after tax each year in wealth. And so I just want to state that, because that's no joke in terms of savings and annual accumulation. And many of the decisions that you are going to be faced with here around your real estate portfolio and those types of things need to be in that context of, this is a 1 year of savings decision. This is a 2 year decision, those types of things. And the fact that your savings rate is so high gives you that phenomenal advantage of being able to do it through that lens. You're not making, if you were saving $10,000 a year, then you're making a 10-year decision, which is totally different than a 1 year, if that makes any sense in terms of those contexts. So yeah, I think like the story here is that most of your wealth, over half of it is just in your San Diego duplex, right? And then everything else is about the remaining maybe third is what I've kind of got here. Do you agree with that as an assessment?
Well, if I pay back the TSP loan, then a lot of that will be tied up in there. If I keep that and keep working in the diverse, I would say it's probably about half and half between the equity of the San Diego property and the cash that I've got available now.
Okay, got it. So you've got a lot of leverage going against this BRRRR. But the clean asset is the equity is all in the net worth is all in your San Diego duplex. Okay. And then your goal again is 5 years. What's the timeline to
for retirement?
Yeah. To Semper Fi.
Oh, to Semper Fi. I love that. I got to remember that one. So I've said 10 years. I'll be 41 this year. So actually 9 years to five. But I honestly, with the way our expenses are set up and everything, we don't spend that much. So I think we can hit that a little bit sooner. That's kind of why I've pulled the trigger on the TSP, because I don't remember what podcast you guys talked about, but it was a long time ago. I heard the term freedom number. So our freedom number is, you know, somewhere around five grand a month, $6,000 a month, if we really want to push it a little bit. And if I retire from the Marine Corps today, half of that is already covered. I'll be getting promoted this year. In 5 years with that promotion and the added years in service, it'll be about $4,000 a month.
So we got a massive asset yet to disclose here. That's been masked by all this, is your pension, right? So what's that pension going to look like at your finish line?
So as of right now, I plan on doing at least 5 more years, and I want to stay longer, but it'll depend on the ability they give me, if it's a job that I enjoy or not. So if I retire in 5 years, put me at 26 years in the Marine Corps. My retirement pay will be right around $4,200 to $4,300 a month.
So you could have a really easy part-time job that, or your wife is still going to be working, I'm assuming, that will cover the rest of that. That's, yeah, we need to definitely mention the military pension, because that's going to really help you out. But also this BRRRR in St. Louis should help you out as well. I did very dirty numbers on a mortgage calculator, and $140,000 at 3% is going to be like $600-$700 a month. And that's just P&I. That's not taxes and insurance. I don't know what the taxes are in St. Louis, but that's $1,000 a month right there, assuming that all of the other numbers come in, you know. So that and your military pension has you kind of covered.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's the elephant in the room here. That's the massive asset. That's $1 million+ asset right there, as far as I'm concerned, or at least it will be within that 5 years.
The military pension? Yeah, the military service in general is the massive asset that we're not talking about, because you mentioned very casually housing allowance, but we didn't talk about your housing allowance, what you're getting versus what you're paying in your mortgage. Is that a wash? Or is that?
So here it's pretty much a wash. My housing allowance here is right around $1,600 a month, and I'm paying $1,345. So I'm saving a little bit.
Okay, so you're making money.
That's great.
You're making money on your housing allowance, and because they just give you $1,600, they don't see what you're paying. And so then that is, so you sell your house. I don't know about Champaign real estate. Because it's college town, I was a little leery about it. But if they've continued to stay open, you know, maybe that's not such a bad deal to maybe continue in the house for a little bit longer.
When I zoom out on your position here, what I see is you got it. Like the retirement is there. It's in your hand and you want to continue working, it sounds like, for the next couple of years. You just want that option at retirement and you're there. Like that pension is going to do it for you. And let me just throw this out here and see how you react to it. But why do you have real estate in four different cities right now from that? Like, what's the game plan there from a strategic lens?
Well, the reason that's happened is because the military moves me around. So basically, wherever I've lived, I've bought a house.
Okay. Yeah. And that's worked out well for you. You got several hundred thousand dollars in wealth from it over time here. But like, if we're zeroing in on that 5-year target, I think that's the elephant in the room, is figuring out that strategy, that core strategy, and what you're going to do there, and then making it passive, because like, you don't want to be in 5 years managing a sprawling real estate portfolio that has different property managers of different competency levels, frankly, in different, spread across different cities. Well, you're gonna be like, dude, I'm making $200 a month on this freaking duplex in St. Louis, and my property manager stinks. And what am I doing? I got $4,200 a month in my pension. I could be chilling on the beach, you know, doing this. Instead, I'm on the phone dealing with that. Anyways, just that's a future state to avoid. If, you know, on the other hand, if you have six properties concentrated in one area that you've got really well run or operationalized, or you have figured out this sprawling empire here and you feel really confident about it as a strategy and like the diversification. But I think that's like the biggest piece of the puzzle to me right now from a strategic lens, is thinking about how does that portfolio advance your fundamental goal here from a strategy perspective. And then I think we've got to talk about your financing things here, because you're sitting on $86,000 in cash and you got a hard money loan and you got a loan against the 401k. Something there feels like there's some fine tuning that we can do to tweak your financing approach and how you're financing, again, your BRRRR in particular here. I'm interested to dive into that. I think you're right that's a big piece there, but I think it's going to be that BRRRR. And then the real estate strategy, the BRRRR, and then what we do with the San Diego duplex from a strategic lens, because those are the big money movers and time sucks for you right now.
Right.
What do you think? Am I onto something?
No, that's definitely something that my wife and I discussed a lot last year before we bought the property in St. Louis, was that now that we're here in the Midwest, it kind of gave me an opportunity to dive into that market a little bit more. So we're doing this first BRRRR, kind of testing the waters, and if it all goes well, we do want to have a few more BRRRRs in St. Louis. And, you know, if we get $200 a property and we get anywhere between 5 and 10 properties there within the next 5 years, I think that'll help cover that gap between my pension and the rest of the money I'd need to get to FI. And I do plan on keeping working after the Marine Corps. My wife plans to keep on working, but I want to hit that number, at least on my side, so that we have options. One of the things we talk about is maybe not having a job that pays, but going somewhere and volunteering for a year or something like that. It's just kind of having that flexibility.
Yeah. So Scott loves the concept of low hanging fruit. And the lowest hanging fruit that I see here is the Arizona house. It's not worth a ton. 125 is still, I mean, it's still 125. It's 50 more than you owe on it. And it's not bringing in any money. Yes, you've got a tenant who is presumably easy to manage. Otherwise, you would not continue to rent it out to that person. What's like if the tenant left? I'm assuming it's a woman, but it's probably not. If the tenant left. Oh, good. I was right. Okay. So if the woman left and you were able to raise the rent to market rent, how much more are you getting?
Well, the market rent right now is not that much higher. It's a 3-bedroom house, and that area, it has gone up a little bit, but right now it'd be around 875, maybe 900.
Okay, so that's not even really worth raising on a good tenant who's been there for a while. But also, you're making no money on this. You're losing money on this deal, even though you're making $50 a month. There's a lot of other things that go into into the numbers that take that $50 right out of your pocket, and a whole lot more. If this was my portfolio, I would look into selling that as soon as I could. It just doesn't benefit you to continue to hold that. And you could take that $50,000 and throw it at another BRRRR or throw it back into your TSP. There are going to be capital gains taxes and depreciation recapture when you sell that property. If she bought it in 2011, did she live there at the time?
She lived in it off and on for about a total of 3 or 4 years.
Okay. That's too far ago to qualify as your personal residence. So if you're not going to move back into that property, I would sell it. I would take the depreciation recapture. I would take the tax hit and just move on. I would also talk to a CPA about that, because I'm assuming that you've been depreciating the property for the entire time that it's been a rental. But if you haven't, the government doesn't care. They assume that you did and they charge you depreciation recapture. So that's something, if you have been, which is great, but if you hadn't been, then I would suggest talking to a CPA to maybe amend your tax returns for years past so you can take the depreciation before you have to recapture it.
I just want to say, I tend to agree with Mindy on this. You, as far as I'm concerned, when we factor in that pension, are a millionaire, maybe one or one and a half times, two times over with that. And you've got this property in Arizona with $50,000 in equity that is probably appreciating at a tiny little rate that's not cash flowing. And look, I get it. Like, it's hard because you're going to spend 8% of the price of the property and seller fees between the agents and all those kinds of things to unload the property. But I just think it's a distraction at this point that's almost immaterial relative to your position. And again, you're talking about a decision that's less than probably 1 year of savings with that and a chance to consolidate and with your portfolio. It's not make or break either way on this. This is probably the easiest or tip of the iceberg as far as movements on the strategic approach. But yeah, I would just tend to agree with Mindy on that property. It seems like is far flung and was not built with the intention of building your overall position long term. Could be a better asset to redeploy into.
Yeah, no, definitely. When she bought it, it was meant to be her home, and just circumstances changed. She turned it into a rental. I'm curious to hear your opinion. One thing that her and I talked about with this property is keeping it at least for the next few years. And then when her son, who is in eighth grade right now, when he goes off to college in 4.5 years, maybe you selling it at that point in order to help pay for his college. Do you think that'd be worth it, or would it still be better to sell it now and maybe put that money into bonds or something to protect it until he gets to college?
I don't know that selling it now versus selling it in a few years is going to make much difference to his college fund. And with you being military, having the GI Bill could be maybe more helpful to paying for his college. And you take this money and put it into a different place in your current situation where you can grow that more, you know, put that back into your TSP, put that into your, you know, another burr in St. Louis if this one works out.
Yeah,
so reinvesting that money somewhere else might be better.
Yeah.
I think if you intend to spend money on college, you know, and you want it to be really low risk, you just dump it into a savings account or a CD or a money market or something and take the small interest rates of those types of things. But in general, if you're looking to build your wealth, I think you deploy your wealth around the best overall blend of risk return that you like across your entire portfolio and leverage that mathematically to then give the best advantage to paying for whatever it is you want downstream, whether that's college or something else. So, if it's in a long-term lens over 50 years, I just dump my money into an index fund and set it and forget. If I needed it in 3 years, I might not do that because I might want to, you know, I might want to put it in something that doesn't have a chance of being super volatile in the meantime. But I don't think, you know, that rental property, every year, the Bigger Pockets community predicts the next recession is coming right around the corner, right? And they've done that for the last 7 years. It's been a terrifying ride for me since I bought my first property, but it keeps going up. One of these days, they're going to be right. So are you really at any lower risk by keeping it in that property until your son goes to college? I don't know. I don't think so. I think you're taking that same risk on, you know, without that. I just think, again, from a strategic lens, having this particular property doesn't seem to be moving you towards any of your goals. And I think it's a distraction on your mind share to a certain extent, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere is where I'm kind of picking up.
That's also what I was going to say. The duplex in San Diego is a little more difficult to just dismiss outright, even though it's not making a lot of money. It's not losing as much money as the Arizona property is. And it's in San Diego, which is my like favorite city. So
yeah, there's stakes in that one. That's 175 grand in equity that we just discussed, right? And you know, you sell that one, you're pulling out 140 or 150, which you can do some real damage with in that. And so that's an interesting decision. What are you thinking with the San Diego duplex?
So another thing that I've looked into is the way the property's set up, I can actually build another duplex on that property. I've been thinking about maybe in the future, once I've got a little bit more capital, actually doing that, it would be about 300 grand to build another duplex onto the property, but would add another 500,000 or more in value. So I've kind of been toying with that idea, but that's probably something I would do a couple of years from now.
Is it zoned for that?
Yes, it is. So there's a lot of duplexes and fourplexes in that area, and that like that property specifically is already zoned for that.
Do you think your work in St. Louis is preparing you to handle that project?
Not right now. I think maybe in the future, if I do a few more burrs or something like that, then yes. And I know a lot of people jump right into it, but I'm a little bit more conservative, more, careful on that side, especially being this close to retirement. It's like,
yeah, absolutely. I'm close. Right. You're about to retire. You've got, and look, we just said, hey, the pension might be $1 million+ asset, but in the reality of the current situation is that would be betting literally all of your net worth or very much close to it on this particular project in San Diego remote. That's a hope one day, not a practical reality of your current situation, as far as I'm concerned, right? So I think that's the right assessment. But you believe, I guess, absent that project, because when you think about that project, ideally the buyer, someone who were to buy your duplex, would factor in that potential into the purchase price, and that would be reflected in the lot value and the value of that duplex in general. So I think that's a good one to really think through, maybe talk to a couple agents in the area and see what their opinions are, maybe a couple of investors, and just test your assumptions a little bit more on a gut check level and say, am I really going to build another duplex on this from scratch within the next 5-10 years? Or should I really be like, okay, that's a potential of this, and somebody who does that more close to the thing can do that? Because I got a duplex where that's a potential outcome as well. But I think it's less than a 10% chance that I actually pull off that scrape and rebuild project. And that the much more likely outcome is that somebody buys it from me and does that project. So,
no, it's definitely a very intimidating project to think about.
Yeah. It's like,
do you have a contractor out in San Diego?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. I will send you the name of the guy who built my house in Longmont and then moved to San Diego. He does stairs. Oh, these are the best, most quiet stairs, rock solid. And that is a tough thing to do. Like everything else he does is great too, but the stairs were like amazing. So I'll send you his name after we get off here. He's fabulous.
Yeah. Okay.
I just think that this duplex deserves a significant bigger piece of your mind share. I'm using that word a lot, but I'm detecting that all of your attention and focus is going on this burr in St. Louis. And that may be correct because that's where you plan strategically to deploy a lot more capital over the coming years. That's great. But right now you've got this big pile of money sitting in that property. And I think you've got like a couple of ideas here and there about it, and I think you should really test those, validate them, and make a decision on that property. Yeah, and that decision might be to do nothing and just do exactly what you're doing with the current structure. But I think that's more than half of your current wealth that you have access to pre-pension. And so I think I just think there's a big decision coming with that property that deserves a little bit more attention and thought. And I think, you know, I'm skeptical that we're going to build another duplex on that lot in a short-term time period, frankly.
You'd be right.
Well, short term, but he can hold it for 5 years and then figure that out. Do you know David Perret?
That's true, but he's got. But I think that's got to be more of like a okay. I am going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's definitely. Yeah. It's. I mean, it's something I want to do, but it's not anytime soon, and I don't know that I'll ever get to that point. But it's one of the things I think about is if the military decides to station me in San Diego again, I can house hack it. So while I'm there, I can build onto it. But again, it's still a lot of ifs, so there's definitely nothing concrete about it.
Yeah. Do you know David Perret?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say, he's in San Diego. He can connect you with some agents who can look at the property, look at the address, and be like, oh, yeah, you could totally do that. Or, oh, that's a terrible idea. I think San Diego is awesome, but I know that not every part of it is awesome. Although every part of it's awesome when you live in the Midwest. Okay, sorry, Midwesterners. I lived in the Midwest for a long time.
Oh, geez. I didn't say anything.
Listen, I lived in Wisconsin, and the sun would go behind the clouds in October, and in April, it would come back out. I am spoiled in Colorado, where we get 330 days of sun every year, and we are way going off the rails here. So let's get back to, this is now our show. It's Fabio's show.
Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/BP.
And let's talk about the BRRRR now. And I want to know, why do you have a $1,200 payment on this BRRRR, but also $86,000 in cash? Like, how did that come to pass with all that financing?
So basically, I can have the private money lender do an inspection anytime, but there's a $140 fee every time they do an inspection. So because I have the money for it, I've been paying the rehab out of my own pocket, with the intent of when the contractor finishes the first part, the first major part, then having them.
More fundamentally, though, what was the private money for? Was that used to finance construction, or what was that?
So for everything, yeah, for the rehab, the purchase, the whole gamut from start to finish.
And so I'm hearing that again. I started this process with 35-ish in cash. I pulled 100,000 from my TSP, And now I've got another loan on top of that. How much is the private loan for?
So it'll be for the rehab plus the purchase, so 145.
Okay, so fundamentally what I'm confused on is, if I've got $145,000 in this and I've got $135,000 in cash, why did I take that loan first place? Yeah, why do I have a private money loan in the first place?
So initially, I was going to do it all on my own. And then talking to the agent and all, and he's actually an agent that found on Bigger Pockets, he connected me with the private money lender. And so what kind of got me onto the idea of it is that I could take the loan on and do more projects at once, which I've wanted to do, and I've been looking at more properties. I just haven't found any more. So my plan was around month four or so to get another property. I just haven't found another property that makes sense with the numbers. If I did it all with my money, then I would only be able to do one at a time. So I haven't been able to start on the second one, but that's kind of the intent behind it. Still just searching.
I see. So here's what I don't love at the strategic level, again, with this approach, is I've got equity sitting in these other properties that are not fundamentally serving me. And I've got a pretty good cash rate and a good savings rate, good chunk of savings. And I'm borrowing against my TSP, my military 401k. And that's a really low interest rate borrowing activity, net of all that reality. But then I'm also going to go on and take a private money loan, which I think increases your risk dramatically on your first BRRRR in particular with that, while you're proving the grounds. What I like, and I don't know what the right way to do this is. Maybe there's some thoughts that we could have here, but it would be great to de-risk this project or complete it and get it off the books. Do your next BRRRR, if you're going to do another one, which sounds like you are, with a better source of capital, cash you already have, low interest debt that you can get somewhere else. And then when you feel like you've got your operational engine churning, then seek the private money with the high interest rates and those types of things, right? And so that's, I think, what's fundamentally my challenge with the way you've structured your debt on this property. I think it's just, and I don't think it's like causing you problems. I like the instinct to take a lot of cash. And right now you're at a low risk perspective because you've got a ton of cash that you're sitting on and can handle a lot of things, and you're almost through the rehab. So you're not in like a risky situation. You're just costing yourself some money and not optimizing your portfolio, in my view, at the strategic level.
No, you're absolutely right. What I realized once I started looking for a second property is that without a deal flow, this is just taking longer than expected. So I really could have done it with my own money and saved almost $10,000 in this monthly payments to a private money lender had I done it with my own money. In my head, when I first started, I thought, 4 or 5 months in, I'll be able to find a second property and jump right in. Reality, without a deal flow, it has not been that easy. So yeah, it's been taking longer.
All the cool kids use private money as well, which is not helpful, right? So it's like, why? I would use private money. That's what a real investor does. No, a real investor uses private money because they don't have the access to the other better sources of financing out there that they can get, and they've exhausted those options. Then they go to private money, which is way more expensive. What's the interest rate on this private money loan?
I don't have it on here on my paper, actually. I don't remember off the top of my head, but
I bet it's north of 10%.
It was supposed to be 14% and we landed at 12%.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's my fundamental problem. That's probably more than the rate of return you might be getting on some of your equity investments in real estate, right? And that's a 14% guaranteed return. So I think that's the elephant in the room in terms of the financing piece for me. My recommendation would be to think through how to avoid that at all costs in the future using your own position, and then use that as the next option when you're truly out of other financing sources and feel like you've got a real winner of a deal in an operationalized business. That's a tool you can use for scale from that point rather than the tool to get started, because that's just, again, it's going to bleed you probably about $10,000 or $15,000. Again, you're doing a lot of things right and your position's going really well. So that's like a 3-month setback in the context of your wonderful, strong financial position. But I think that's just, that would be my observation.
No, I think you're right. And as I've been trying to figure out how to get to this fine number, because I don't necessarily want a giant real estate portfolio, just a couple properties to kind of support it. I was thinking if I can just do one property every 8 to 9 months, with my own money, then over the next 5 years, I'll still accumulate a few.
You've won. Why do you need to build a rental property empire unless you want to? If you want to build a rental property empire, do it. But you don't need, like, you've won. You only need like four of these guys to completely pad over what you're currently spending in retirement with that pension, I think. So that's another big piece of the puzzle for, in my mind.
Yeah, that is why Scott is here, to say things like this.
And you've won, you've earned it. You haven't won. You earned it, right? Yes. This is 21 years in service. I can only imagine what that kind of career is like for that. And I'm 6 years into service here at Bigger Pockets. So, but yeah, that's phenomenal. So at the highest level. And so that's where it's like, hey, let's make this easy and a nice, pleasant winner rather than a stressful, high interest way to go about building this portfolio.
Yeah. So let's look at this loan and, you know, is there a penalty for early payoff? Do you have the funds right now to pay everything off and be done with that loan? And back to your TSP, how frequently can you take a loan from the TSP? I mean, obviously you can only borrow what's in there, but once you pay it back, is there a time frame before you can borrow it again?
Yeah, it's about 3 months after you pay it off that you can take a loan again.
Okay. So I'm wondering, and this is more like planting a seed, look at how much you currently owe the hard money lender and how much you have left in your bank account and see if you can cover that and maybe pay that off. Focus on getting the property done. How much longer do you have on your rehab timeframe?
So hoping to be done by end of March.
End of March. Okay. And is there any opportunity for you to go down there, like it is only a 3-hour drive every weekend, and just crank it out and get that done a little sooner?
Right now, I'm actually finishing a master's degree and we'll be done here in April.
Oh, okay.
After that, I'm going to have a lot more free time. But right now, it's pretty busy between work and school.
All right. So we got our hands in a couple different pots here as well. How about this? You got 86K in cash right now, right? Your loan is 140. Can you get a HELOC on that San Diego property?
So I actually looked into getting the HELOC last year, but with COVID, they weren't doing it. I haven't looked into it recently. So that's a good question.
I think if I'm, you know, you don't want to deplete your cash position too much. I think you do want to be sitting on a pile of cash that you can finance operating activities at this BRRRR at the end of the day. I mean, I think below 25 grand is getting you into risky territory in general cash. But if you could get a $75,000 HELOC, that's going to be at 3%. You pay off this hard money lender, this private lender, with that and plus some of your cash position. Now you're financing your BRRRR at 3% or 4% instead of at 14%. It's still a short-term debt and you still have to refinance and pay off that HELOC. Don't get complacent about that HELOC just because it's at a low interest rate, because you still have to pay that off. Then you got to pay off your 401k. I think that this private money situation at 12% is really costing you every month that you're not addressing it. And so maybe that's the right opportunity or way to leverage your San Diego position to a certain extent right now.
Definitely. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Ever since last year when I looked at the HELOC, it wasn't available. I haven't looked into it. So definitely going to do that.
Yeah, I think, things have changed at that point. And I think people, you know, I wonder if you're going to have any trouble at this point.
Right. Yeah. An alternate thought is that since we're at the beginning of February right now, this episode is airing at the end of February. You have basically one more month of hard money payment, and then you can hopefully refi out of that.
Well, he's got to finish the rehab, generally speaking, and maybe even place a tenant before he can refi out of the hard money loan.
Oh, you're right. Well, I forgot about that.
Probably be May or so when I'm refinancing.
Yeah, and this is costing him $1,400 a month in interest, $1,200 a month in interest, right? It's probably interest only. So the entirety of that $1,200 is probably going to interest.
Okay,
so this is like the elephant in the room with your finances here. So I think that that's the, yeah, to me, I mean, you can move that down to 3%. Now you're paying $300 a month. That's a $900 savings activity. I don't know what else you can do in your life to generate $900 more in free cash flow. I don't have anything like that effective.
But and so Arizona.
Yeah. So there's a way to come into more liquidity. If like that would be an interesting thing here. Arizona is probably building your wealth at a rate of like $200 a month or something like that. If we're being generous with the appreciation rate, right? Boom, you sell that, you take out $25,000 after taxes and all that, which is not that much, and you refi- get that HELOC, I bet you between those things, you've got it. You've got the puzzle pieces coming together to get out of this a little sooner and de-risk your position. And then from there, I wouldn't approach the next burr right away. I'd sit for a couple of months and let that burr do its thing. And now you're generating, instead of $4,500 a month, $5,500 a month, because you no longer have this $1,200 leaking out of your bucket. And you're gonna accumulate $20,000 in 4 months. World's gonna look a lot different after you're accumulating that kind of cash that quickly. And your next burr will be that much easier to finance and tackle. You'll also have that operational experience that you've just invested in. So I see a position for you at, towards the end of the year, where you're financing the burr with much, much better debt terms, perhaps a consolidated position, and aren't in and are going at a steady pace. That's still very aggressive. You could, it's probably like one property a year, but it's not six properties all at once. You know, maybe you do one property a year and then two a year in 2022 or something like that.
Right.
And that's a really nice cadence of wealth building that for you will be really sustainable with that savings rate and those types of things.
Absolutely.
What one last piece of the puzzle here, and I think this all ties together with that burr, is the money you have in after-tax stocks right now. And Mindy has a good point around these types of things to make sure that you're not incurring short-term versus long-term capital gains. But assuming you've held those positions for more than a year or two, you might be able to sell portions of those stocks and redeploy them either into TSP or other retirement stuff, things like that, or to give yourself some liquidity. When I think about index fund investing, I think I'm going to get a long-term 7 to 10% return. Right now, you've got a 12% return by getting out of that hard money loan, that private money lender loan. And so there's some arbitrage potentially there, although I wouldn't incur a significant short-term capital gain, which is going to be taxed at your ordinary income level in order to do that. But I might incur a long-term capital gain. We're splitting hairs with a little bit with that. But in general, that might be another source, another piece of that puzzle that can come together to help you get out of that financing challenge there. Really? And by the way, that financing, you think you're going to be done in May, and you might be, but what if it goes into September? You know, ever think anybody that does their first burr goes a little longer than they were hoping in terms of being able to refinance? So you may have $6,000-$8,000 left in interest payments on this loan before it's all said and done. Something to that I think, again, you can avoid with some creativity and moving some of the puzzle pieces in your portfolio together.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point. And so when I bought the stocks last year, it was kind of spread out between March and June. So definitely want to keep them in there at least until June. And what I was thinking with that money is just putting it into a high yield savings, if you can still call them that today, just as an emergency fund.
Yeah, that, you know, I love an emergency fund. I'm a huge proponent of an emergency fund, but I really want to see this hard money loan get wiped out. And I think that should be your first focus. And then the emergency fund, we spoke before we started recording, we didn't actually say this during the recording, you're able to sock away $2,200 a month just into a savings account from your regular, what?
I thought it was $4,500 a month.
The $2,200 goes into the cash.
After the private money loan is paid off and everything.
How much is it per month?
$2,200 a month in savings, and then the private money loan, $1,200.
I got that wrong. Okay. So we're saving we could be saving at a $3,500 a month rate, not a $4,500 a month rate, but that would be immediately achievable after the hard money loan is paid off.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is you could crank out a 6 month emergency fund pretty quickly just based on that. And you have, you know, I think there's a lot of other opportunities for that, but I have to agree with Scott. And I really like the fact that he was able to look at that and be like, whoa, why are we doing this? Because at the outset, oh, I'll just borrow this money. It's great. I am so cheap. I could never get a private money loan because 12% gives me hives. But I see why that would be, you know, and it can be a great opportunity for the right opportunity. And I like the burr in St. Louis. I would love to see you get another one like this after this one's done. I'm assuming, because you didn't say you had a terrible experience with your contractor, I'm assuming that you've had a good experience. They've done what they said they were going to do for the price that they said they were going to do it. Maybe not quite in the time frame. They're always really ambitious with those time frames. But yeah, Scott said the burr might go a little long. Double your cost estimate and triple your time estimate. And then you might almost come in right where you're thinking you're going to come in. For the first burr. For the second burr, then you will recognize, you know, oh, I didn't have to go with this. I could go with this and it's off the shelf and it's ready now and I could do this. And like, we all make mistakes with our rehabs. It is a thing. But you're coming in, it sounds like you're coming in lower than your rehab estimate.
Well, and part of that is because my brother's going to be helping me with the floors and a lot of stuff. So that's saving me several grand between.
Is he getting any economics for that are part of the fact that the equation? No,
I'm paying my brother for that because he's going to be doing it on the weekends. Right.
Okay, good. Yeah. Cash is good. Not these complex, you know, the partnership's fine, but just hopefully he's trading his time for cash, not equity or anything like that.
Yes.
Okay, great.
No.
Okay. Well, I think we have a pretty good set of suggestions here, Scott. I think we're both in agreement that the Arizona property doesn't really do you many favors. I think you're in agreement as well. Talk to your wife and see how she feels about letting it go. Sometimes selling something can be kind of difficult, especially if it's your first property. Sometimes you don't care. I had a hard time selling my current property or my last property just because we were there for so long. The San Diego property, I would really... It's still bringing in the difference between the mortgage and the rent was $650.
Around so there.
I wouldn't say that it's losing your money. It's just not generating the kind of cash that you want it to be generating. But if you want to live in San Diego down the road, if you can build another duplex on there and turn it into a quad, I can see that as an opportunity where you don't have to sell it right away. You can put more time into it. So definitely reach out to those agents that we talked about. The St. Louis thing we've talked about, you're going to continue that burr, pull the money out, pay off the loan as soon as you can by leveraging some of the other opportunities that you have. And then we didn't really talk too much about paying for college for the kids, but you've got the GI Bill. You said you're getting your master's. How much is left over from the GI Bill that you're using that you could share with the kids?
So actually, I've been very fortunate the way I've worked everything out with the military. I got my bachelor's degree for almost free. I paid maybe $3,000 over the years, just with different programs in the military. And then the master's, here in Illinois, I'm working as a Marine instructor at the ROTC unit at the University of Illinois. So by working at the university, they consider me part of the staff. And as part of the staff, I'm getting my master's degree for free.
That's awesome. Can your kids go to school there for free because you are at severely discount because you're staff?
They could. Unfortunately, by the time they're ready to go to college, I won't be here anymore because I only have a year and a half left.
Okay. Should have had kids sooner.
that's our big advice there.
Only I could go back in time.
I'm going to give a shout out to my client, Sean, who is doing the exact same thing in Boulder.
Oh, nice.
And he listens to the show too. Hi, Sean. He's a Marine Corps ROTC instructor. And I think he's working on his master's as well.
Yeah, I haven't used any of my GI Bill. So the way I initially had it set up to where it was all going to go to my son, now with my wife and her having a teenager as well, I split it so that some benefits are going to my son, some going to her son. And we're able to move that back and forth depending on their needs for college. But if they both go to college full-time at a public school or something like that, then we will need more than the GI Bill because that only covers 4 years at a public institution.
At the end of the day, you're going to have to pay for that college some way. I just don't see how the Arizona property, the dollars in the Arizona property are any different than dollars somewhere else, you know, in your San Diego or whatever, right? You can finance that with any of those dollars. And I just think that those dollars in particular in the Arizona property aren't part of your core strategy and aren't material enough to make a difference with that. And you're sitting here in 3 years, if it's 3.5% appreciation, you know, you might get a 8% compound. I don't know. I'm making these completely pulling these numbers out of the air. I got no idea.
I think he's getting like a 1% compound interest. I think it's not really,
yeah.
I mean, it's not moving the needle at all. I don't know how much mental bandwidth it takes up from you, but I would just sell it and take that money and put it towards something else that will generate more than negative $50 a month.
Yeah, I mean, you're negatively cash flowing on that because you're with the spread between your rent and your mortgage is very small, and you're piling up a liability in the form of that roof when it's going to be replaced, or your fridge or whatever it is, right? That you're not calculating at this point. And
There you go. Okay, well, Fabio, this was fantastic. I think that we have covered a lot of things. I think we've given you a lot of things to think about. I would like to see you start contributing to your TSP again once this BRRRR is all wrapped up. We didn't really talk about that too much, but I think just, you know, consistently contributing to your retirement account is a good plan. There's very few instances when I recommend not consistently contributing to your retirement plan.
The only reason I wasn't sure about that is because, you know, because I'm so close to reaching the FI number that in my head, I was thinking, what's more important, reaching my FI number now or the retirement plan at 65? And I joke with my wife, between being a Marine and all the risk-taking activities that I do between riding motorcycles and snowboarding and all that, I might not make it to 65. So he doesn't like that joke. But that's kind of one of the things I'm focusing on, is trying to reach FI faster so that I don't have to worry about retirement at 65.
I get it. And I agree with Mindy. My agreement is less of a strong position, because as far as I'm concerned, your retirement account is the pension. So we got like a million. I don't know what the asset value of that is, but like $40,000 a month is going to be $48,000 a year. You're looking at over $50,000 in income guaranteed by the U.S. government. That is a high value asset, right? I'm probably way conservative in $1 million to $1.5 million. It's probably a $2 million asset. And so when you got $2 million in your pension, do I really need to get to 250 in my 401k, my TSP at the same time? So I kind of get that from that stance. I do think it would be great to pay back the loan and those types of things and shore up your financial foundation, so you're not having to use short-term debt except for, you know, in targeted cases. Short-term debt's a great thing to do for a BRRRR. And the best short-term debt for that BRRRR is probably going to be a HELOC, and then maybe a loan from the 401k rather than private money in this case, until your business scales and from an operational standpoint. But yeah, like I think contributing back to the TSP will be great, but I don't think it's, I agree with Mindy, but I don't know. I also kind of get the skepticism of like, okay, you know.
I hear what you're saying, Scott. I'll allow it.
All right.
Okay, Fabio, I hope this was helpful. I hope this gives you some ideas to consider and to, you know, just reshift your focus a little bit. And was it helpful?
Absolutely. This is exactly what I was looking for.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay, well, I want to know how this plans out. So when you've made some of these changes, after you sell the Arizona house and after you refi out of this or pay off this loan, I want to talk to you again.
And all of these are just suggestions or thoughts and what we're doing with that. So, you know, this is going to be your decisions at the end of the day. We're not telling you to sell the Arizona house necessarily with official advice, all this, you know, disclaimer and that kind of stuff. It's just that's our take based on what you presented us today. Those are some things to think about. And I think hopefully they help you frame your overall plan.
No, and you guys make a lot of sense. I mean, you definitely gave me a lot to think about. So obviously got to talk to my wife about it. She's the boss.
Yes. I was going to say that. Happy wife, happy life. Do not make big financial decisions without talking to your wife. But yes, I think that is awesome. Set up a money date. Have a nice conversation. Okay, wonderful. Fabio, thank you so much today for coming on and sharing your information with us. I think as other people listen to where you are at, they can start to see similarities in their mind, or, ooh, I was going to buy this house and now it doesn't really turn out that it cash flows very well. Maybe I'll look for a different deal, or, you know, however it works out. And I'm not dogging your wife for buying a house that didn't cash flow. I bought a lot of houses that didn't cash flow anything. So, you know, I just think that it's time to take the money and run.
Yeah. Thank you, Fabio. This has been fantastic. And I hope that you reach Semper Fi with it as in as short a time period as possible.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Thank you, guys. This was great.
Okay. Thank you, Fabio. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Scott, that was Fabio.
I thought it was awesome. And I really loved your Semper Fi pun. That was awesome.
It wasn't my Semper Fi pun. It was my Semper Fi pun in the beginning that I said, but it came from Scott, like always. But that's great.
I think it's great. None of us have made that connection before. So
pursuing Semper Fi. And I mean, that's a big part of his plan is his military pension. So he really is pursuing Semper Fi. And now I can't wait to talk to all of my Marine Corps friends to tell them that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really liking these Finance Fridays because we're getting such a diversity of backgrounds and money stories and situations here. And, you know, it's interesting because we thought, I don't know, I thought at first that it was going to be a lot of folks who were getting started in those types of things. But I think we found that people with net worths in the 500, the $1, $2, $3, $5 million ranges still are struggling with a lot of clarity and getting a simple, scalable approach to their money in place. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to dive in and so thankful that people like Fabio come on the show and share all this detail with us so that we can learn alongside you guys, our listeners, with it. So just any feedback on the Finance Fridays would be really appreciated. You can leave it in the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/BP Money. And we'd love to see it and check it out and then have a discussion around it.
Yes. And we would love to talk to you about your finances. If you would like to come on and share them with us, you can apply at biggerpockets.com/financereview. And we have had mainly men applying to the show, which is not a bad thing. I love my men, but I also love my ladies. So ladies, if you would like to have your finances reviewed, please come in and apply. Ping me, Mindy@biggerpockets.com, and let me know that you'd love to share. We are not here to make fun of you or make you feel bad, or like we're not the Howard Stern of finance. We just want to look at your finances. And oof. Sometimes when you're in the middle of it. What?
Oh, I just love it. Like, what a nice what a little knockout blow for Howard. Yeah.
He can be abrasive. And we are not. But sometimes when you're in the middle of your finances, you can't really see other options, or you have it in your mind, I have to do this. And sometimes if you do this, it's a little bit better. And we would love to look at your finances and see what suggestions we can make for you. So please fill out the form at biggerpockets.com/financereview. Okay, Scott, should we get out of here?
Let's do it.
From episode 174 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, he is Scott Trench, and I am Mindy Jensen, saying I'm late for my bus, Gigantopithecus.
Whoa. Awesome. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom, and the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into real estate investing or take it to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With the Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.